What You Make of It by The Hoyden, read by Night Tracer, fandom Hockey RPF, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Everyone knows to leave Sydney to his routines before a game. Sydney insists that it makes him easy to find, and indeed, Gino never encounters any difficulty in locating Sydney for the parts of his routine that Gino fits into. Gino knows that it means something, on the profound side, that a man so invested in his own rituals would bend them, shape them around Gino. And even when he was a stranger in a strange land, Gino took comfort in that. So it's definitely best to leave Sydney to it. He's seen Sydney's icy reaction to deliberate interference, but it's nothing like the fit Sydney throws the night his lucky necklace breaks. Coach Balsma is due to walk in any minute, and Sydney is not so quietly freaking out. Definitely broken, Dupuis says, looking at the chain. I don't even think they can fix that. You'll probably have to get a new one. Nielsi and Tanger, clustered around, lean away nervously at that, and Sydney looks devastated. I've had that since I was 18, Sydney moans. My grandma gave it to me after the draft. It's my good luck necklace. Gino can actually see Tanger debating whether to give Sydney shit over wearing something from his grandmother, and then can see him just as clearly decide against it. If Flower wasn't already in his strange goalie zone, though, he definitely would have. You don't need it, Knitz says unwisely. You'll be fine without it. Everyone winces, and sure enough, Sydney rounds on him. I haven't played a single NHL game without that necklace, he snaps. Enough is enough. Coach will be coming, and none of these idiots are helping. Sid, Gino says, and gets to his feet, walking over in his skates. He reaches up to the clasp of the chain round his own neck, undoes it, and before Sydney can say anything at all, Gino leans down and fastens it around his neck, closing the clasp by touch while facing Sydney. There, Gino says, new necklace, make new luck. Sydney's eyes are wide with surprise as Gino straightens the chain around his neck. Gino, he says, almost in reproach. You don't have to, really, I don't. Sid, Gino says firmly, wear necklace, have good game. Sydney's hand comes up to touch the pendant, and the chain is thicker than Sydney favours, but Gino can't help but think that it looks good on him. Then Sydney is licking his lips and tucking the necklace under his jersey, and that's when Coach strides into the room for his pre-game. Sydney lights it up that night, like he's determined to prove Gino right. After the game, a 6-1 win over the Ducks, Sydney is ebullient and wandering from the shower to secondary locker room, naked except for Gino's necklace. Gino keeps looking over and catching the light glinting off the chain where it lies against Sydney's skin. Gino's mother is fond of telling him that he's his own worst enemy. Under the circumstances, he has to admit that she has a point. He really has no one to blame but himself. When Sydney comes over, after he's gotten mostly dressed, fingers fiddling with the chain. I wanted to say thank you, he says, standing close, voice pitched for Gino alone. It really helped. His fingers catch and hold the pendant, worrying it. And then Sydney says ruefully, guess I should give it back, huh? He definitely should, because watching Sydney molest his necklace is doing terrible things to Gino. But Gino's track record against Sydney's pleading look is about as good as that against his dog, which is to say, completely miserable and shamefully pathetic. Which is why only Sydney is surprised when Gino finds himself saying, keep it. Gino, Sydney protests, because despite all his weirdness, he was raised well. Gino allows himself a single indulgence in recompense and adjusts the necklace a bit so that the clasp is centred at Sydney's nape. The chain is warm, and the way it slithers across Sydney's skin is nothing short of mesmerizing.
Keep, Gino says.
And here's the rasp in his own voice.
Told you. Make new luck.
Sidney licks his lips and nods and looks so grateful that Gino can't find it in him to really regret giving out the necklace at all. As near as Gino can determine, Sidney never actually takes necklace off. He wears it in the locker room, in the showers, during practice, and obviously during games. He's wearing it when he comes over to Gino's house, ostensibly to watch a movie, but actually to prod Gino into the kitchen so that Sidney can help him cook dinner. The chain falls out of Sidney's shirt when he leans over the kitchen island counter to grab an avocado from the basket, and Sidney makes a small noise of surprise.
It's heavier than my old one, he says by way of explanation. Not good?
Gino asks uncertainly. Canadians aren't known for their ability to appreciate a fine piece of men's jewellery, after all. Sidney clutches it protectively.
It's great. Very lucky,
he insists, which from Sidney is the highest praise there is. They are on a nice winning streak, which always leads Sidney to make any number of questionable decisions, like occasionally deciding to grow a moustache. He's thankfully forgone it this time around. So, Sidney wears it all the time. Gino is fine with that. It can be distracting, but he's found Sidney distracting since the day he first met him on Mario Lemieux's doorstep, so it's not something he's unused to at this point. The chain is longer than his old necklace, though, and the pendant is much larger, which means Sidney is now constantly fussing with it, absently rubbing the pendant between his fingertips. The first time Sidney puts it between his teeth, Gino nearly groans. Sidney's watching game tape, concentrating fiercely, and the pendant is pillowed on his lower lip. And Coach is saying something very important about the Bruins, D-men, that Gino is obviously paying attention to, even as Sidney is, mother of God, tonguing his necklace now. Gino's mother tells him no good deed goes unpunished. And he's forced to admit that she might be right there, too. The team has taken note, of course, but as with many of Sid's quirks, it merely rates a collective shrug. Wearing Gino's necklace is just a blip on the radar of weird shit Sidney does. But Gino should have known better than to think that Alex Ovechkin would let it pass unremarked upon. It's perversely, perfectly Alex. But he seems to have warmed up to Sidney over the years. For his part, Sidney appears to find Alex's aggressive friendliness alarming, but he calms down when he has Gino nearby. The Caps are getting ready to take the ice following the Penguins' morning skate, which means that there's a little bit of chit-chat between teams going on. Sidney is waiting by the bench, having just finished his turn at their last drill, when Alex says suddenly, "Nice necklace, Sid." He's utterly sincere in his appreciation. Gino can tell, but Sidney can't.
Thanks,
Sidney says warily. It's not mine, though. It's... He darts a glance over at Gino. Alex's eyes go nearly half-lidded in contemplation.
Zenya,
he says, switching to Russian. Did you give it to him? The innuendo is heavy-handed, but Alex rarely has a use for subtlety. Gino looks heavenward briefly and responds in kind.
He is borrowing it.
A salacious grin takes over Alex's face.
It's true. You do have to take it back when you're done, unless you go for round two right away. Like you've ever gotten up for round two in your entire life, Gino says.
What are you saying? Sidney demands. He's capable of being patient when he can't understand conversations that don't involve him. But when it's plain that they're about him, he gets a little touchy.
Nothing, Alex says innocently. At the same time, Gino says, he have tiny dick.
Alex looks wounded, but he deserves it.
Okay, Sidney says slowly. I'm going to go shower. Gino, you coming?
It's an unfortunate way to phrase it, and Alex waggles his eyebrows in their direction, before Gino sighs and obediently follows Sidney to the locker room. A few weeks later, Sidney rings his doorbell on a day off. His dog, Jeffrey, slobbers joyfully all over Sidney because apparently Every living being in the Malkin household regards Sidney Crosby with helpless adoration. Even his cat, who hates basically everyone, likes to bring Sidney presents in the form of milk jug rings and the occasional dead bug. "Listen," Sidney says, after they've settled on the sofa in the den. "I took my necklace, my old necklace, to this place Murray recommended. Turns out they actually were able to fix it." "Oh," Gino says, and he can't deny that he feels a little disappointed. He's nearly grown used to seeing Sidney wearing his necklace, and more or less fiddling with it. He's not sure anyone can be desensitized to watching Sidney's lip wrap around anything, but he'd almost begun to learn to live with it. Almost. "So," Sidney says, and then stops. He has one hand in his pocket, which is not unusual for Sidney, but is unusual for Sidney alone with Gino. Hands in pockets are Sidney's defense against strangers touching him, as if his refusal to touch them will prevent them from assuming the reverse is welcome. But then he draws his hand out, and his hand is clenched. "Maybe it's dumb," Sidney says hurriedly, darting a quick glance at Gino. "I just thought, it's not fair to keep all your luck for myself. I'm not... I want you to have it too."
"Sid," Gino says.
And of course, Sidney has been winding himself up over this during the last month. He should have seen that coming.
"Told you. For you. For new luck."
"Yes," Sidney says, nodding his head in excited agreement. "That's it, exactly. So I thought, if I swap the chains, so I could have made a 7 back, and you can have your pendant back, but we have each other's chains. Then it's like the new for both of us, right?" Gino stares at him. Sidney looks so hopeful. But as Gino tries to find word to say, Sidney visibly deflates. "Sorry, I guess it's kind of dumb. I just wanted..." He opens his fist, and there's the necklace, chain, and pendant cupped in his palm. "I wanted to share with you." Gino reaches out, and Sidney seems to hold his breath as Gino hooks a finger under the chain around Sidney's neck, drawing it out from under his shirt. There's the 87 hanging on Gino's chain, and Gino's often a victim of sentiment. But never more so than now, it seems.
"Looks nice," he says eventually,
when it's clear that he's not going to succeed in stuffing those feelings down.
"Maybe. I miss you wearing all my necklace, though. Russian style. Look good on you."
Sidney's face goes from downcast to pleased, to sort of offended, to some expression that even Gino is hard-pressed to characterize. And then, Sidney goes up on one knee on the sofa, watching Gino's face carefully as he undoes the clasp on the necklace in his hand. And it's almost unbearably intimate. Sidney, with his arms around Gino's neck, face close, and Sidney biting his lower lip in concentration as he fastens the necklace and gently tugs it into place. The chain feels different, less substantial, and the pendant rests a little higher than he's used to. But none of that feels like it matters right now. Sidney hasn't moved away, and he licks his bee-stung lips once, and enough is enough. Gino wraps one hand around Sidney's nape, the chain rubbing against his palm, and pulls Sidney in slowly, giving him every chance to refuse, to tell Gino no, to say he doesn't want this. And then, Sidney draws in a sharp breath and leans in the rest of the way, pressing his lips against Gino's in a kiss that feels sweet and desperate. Like, Sidney expects Gino to be the one to say no. He even makes to pull back, like he's not sure this is something he can have, but Gino won't let him. Just kisses him, and it's frantic. And maybe they should take it slow. But instead, Gino grabs Sidney's thigh and coaxes him to straddle Gino's lap, and that definitely doesn't calm anyone down. Gino has one hand clutching Sidney's ass and the other wrapped around his back, with his fingers brushing the chain around Sidney's neck and the noises Sidney is making. He sounds alternately surprised and pleading. And Gino wants to ask him what he wants, what he needs, but all he can do is kiss Sidney, and kiss him some more, sucking on his full lower lip and looking into his mouth, like he's been wanting to do for years. "You liked it," Sidney says, panting the pull apart.
"Of course, like us," Gino mutters,
while laying kisses along Sydney's jaw, on his way to tongue the skin under Sydney's ear, which results in a gratifying coo of a moan and a low, tight circle of Sydney's hips in his lap. Sydney grips Gino's shoulders and does that devastating shimmy again, even as he tilts his head for better access. I mean, the necklace. You liked me wearing it. It's unfair to ask his brain to operate in English right now, which Gino maintains is a fundamentally stupid language anyway. All exceptions and no rules. It's especially unfair when he's got both hands cupped around Sydney's ass now, and he's dragging his tongue alongside his chin around Sydney's neck.
Look like mine, Gino manages,
and then nips at Sydney's neck just above his collar. It earns him another of those high-pitched sighs before Sydney says, sounding confused,
"It was yours.
Fucking English.
Sid, look like mine."
Gino tries again. Sydney pulls back to look Gino in the eye, and his lips are wet and red, and his eyes are wide, and he looks so vulnerable. And Gino wonders if he said the wrong thing. But Sydney just takes in a stuttering sob of a breath and kisses Gino again. All of the urgency is back. Maybe because Sydney keeps moving his hips in a sinuous grind that obliterates all other concerns besides the desire to get their clothes out of the way. And even then, Gino doesn't want to take his mouth away from Sydney's neck long enough to take off their shirts. Just pops the button on Sydney's jeans, fumbles with the zipper, and drags them and Sydney's underwear down his hips. Sydney's hands are busy too, opening Gino's pants, and when he draws Gino's cock out through his boxers, Gino can't help but groan. Sydney's necklace sliding between Gino's lips and his skin.
Oh, fuck.
Sydney sighs in his ear when Gino wraps his hand around Sydney's cock, already slick at the tip. And then, Sydney starts jerking him off too, and there's no hesitation there, just Sydney gripping him just right. And Gino wonders where the confidence came from, but he dismisses it because he has Sydney now. Sydney, with Gino's gold chain around his neck, panting, and meeting Gino's mouth in messy kisses. He sounds close, so Gino strokes him faster, until he feels Sydney tense, a helpless noise high in his throat escaping him as he comes in Gino's fist. Gino had every intention of being a gentleman and letting Sydney collect himself, but that was before he was confronted with the reality of a lapful of Sydney looking wrecked in the best possible way. Cheeks flushed and jeans open. So he reaches down to cover Sydney's hand with his own, tangling their fingers together, and everything is slick with Sydney cum. And he's already so fucking close when Sydney mutters,
"Next time, I want to blow you, can I?"
Gino comes harder than he has in recent memory. "So, is that a yes?" Sydney asks, several minutes and a few sloppy kisses later. It takes Gino a bit to process what the hell Sydney is talking about, but he says,
"Whatever Sid want."
It's basically been his policy since they met, and Gino doesn't see the need to alter it at this point. Sydney hums a pleased note against Gino's neck, and eventually they're going to have to get up and put themselves back together, but for the moment, Gino just holds him close, hand at Sydney's nape and brushing at the damp curls there, the necklace warm under Gino's palm. Gino's mother is the one who notices. His parents have come to visit for the month, and they appear to have taken in stride the fact that Sydney lives with him in all but name. In particular, his mother seems to view this as a prime opportunity to feed Sydney up for the duration of their stay. Although Gino has tried to point out that Sydney has about 10 pounds on him in muscle, and is hardly in danger of wasting away, his mother ignores him entirely. She's just lucky they've come in the middle of the season, when Sydney carbo loads and therefore eats everything Gino's mother puts in front of him, while she looks on approvingly. One afternoon, he and Sydney are seated at the kitchen table, eating their pre-game meal, when Gino's mother stops behind Sydney and fixes his collar. She purses her lips thoughtfully for a moment.
"Senya," she asks,
"you gave your necklace to him?" Gino strongly considers shoving more food into his mouth to avoid answering, but it would only delay the inevitable.
"Only half," he says, aiming for nonchalant. "We traded chains."
She looks incredulous. "You gave him the chain from the necklace your grandfather gave you after the draft?"
Some kind of Canadian superstition.
He offers an explanation. He's not at all ashamed of Sidney, but he's not eager to discuss the extent and nature of their relationship with his mother before he and Sidney have gotten up the nerve to discuss a more permanent, legal arrangement. Gina's ears are still burning from her last lecture about cohabitation and commitment. Perhaps it's some kind of Canadian superstition to share the same bed too, she says blandly. Gina winces.
Sidney looks curious, but he's focused on eating and won't interrupt his mother anyway.
She shakes her head and pats Sidney's shoulder affectionately. Xenia, you two will make your own luck together. Necklace or no necklace, she says, before leaving them to eat.
What was that? Sidney asks.
He's picking up a little Russian here and there, but not enough to make sense of anything beyond the simplest of exchanges.
Gina waves a hand to indicate both of their necklaces.
Lucky, he says.
Sidney's expression is soft and open.
Yeah,
he says, lips curving in a smile.
We are.
Gino nearly opens his mouth to explain that wasn't quite what he meant. But Sidney's right, all the same. And Gino finds himself smiling back, helplessly, in honest, happy agreement.
The end. Thank you for listening.